Hello, and welcome to the Mercenary Star Podcast. Today, we are on episode 12, which is also the start of season 2, if you will, year 2. This is the first episode of 2024. Super excited to be getting into some awesome stuff today. And so we've got a very special episode, and I can't wait to get into it because it's going to be a lot of fun. But just to get into it, we are a BattleTech podcast highlighting the storied mercenary units in the BattleTech universe. Again, my name is Seth, also known as White Fox SG, and I am your host. And today we have a recruitment episode, if you will. As we'll be covering the following questions: what is BattleTech, and why is now a great time to get into it? And joining me today is my friend and special guest, Sullis, who has these questions. He has never played BattleTech. He doesn't know hardly anything about it other than the Not things that he's gleaned from me. But he is a good friend of mine. He is in my D&D group, Hearth and Hammer, and he is also in my Star Citizen group, and it runs a podcast for Star Citizen called Beyond the Verse. We'll have shout outs and links in the show notes. But before we dive in, who is Sullis?
Well, I'm honored. We'll start with that. It's first one of 2024. Man, congratulations.
Thank you.
To be part of episode 12, man. I'm excited to see where this goes. So thanks for having me, period. But I'm honored to be the first of 2024. So thanks for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second, I have no idea what BattleTech even is. I know like high level back in the 80s. I know it's got 40 years worth of material and lore, and I can't wait to ask you all the questions. Absolutely. Yeah, but I guess my backstory, and I'll be very quick here, my origin story. I started creating content back in Wrath of the Lich King in World of Warcraft.
Awesome.
And if you're familiar, if listeners are familiar, I know you are, one of the hero classes or the new class was like the Death Knight. And so I'm thinking Death Knight, somebody without a soul, soulless. But Sullis was already taken, like S-O-U-L-L-E-S-S, was already taken. So I had to play off of that and became Sullis.
Very nice. Clever. Classic gamer tag problems, right?
That's right. Yeah. So the origin story, I mean, it's from there. From there, I created content for SWTOR, went into Elder Scrolls Online, took a break and was in D&D with the Lore Seekers, and then New World. Now, yes, I host the Beyond the Verse Star Citizen podcast. So thanks for the shout out.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what I'm currently doing. And again, blessed to be here with you today.
Awesome. And I'm blessed that you get to be a part of my D&D group because you bring a lot to it and it's a lot of fun. So
I haven't died yet.
Nope.
Not yet.
We'll have more attempts at it later. So. okay, awesome. So you kind of gave us like, you know, the origin of Sullis and what video games you've been into. And so what do you know about BattleTech? Like in a nutshell, what are the things? Yeah. It could be, I know it's probably like slim to none, but like, what are the things that you know? And I will say MechWarrior as well, because we'll get into that, but it's the same universe. So.
Sure. Yeah. So when I hear BattleTech, and again, for anybody watching or listening, I literally know nothing. So when I think BattleTech, when I see it, I recognize the logo. I recognize the name. It's, of course, you know, canon among gamers. But I think like Titanfall, StarCraft, kind of a scientific military game. And I'm probably insulting everybody by saying that, but
they'll forgive you as we get into it.
Tell me more. But that's essentially it. Again, I know it was in the 80s. I know it started off, you know, obviously small, and now it's in an infinite amount of locations, different play styles. So I've been curious. You and I have talked, on other platforms, and I want to learn more. I sincerely want to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, first, what are some questions that you have brought to the table today? I want to have you ask those, and then if, or you don't have to ask all of them, if you have a couple that you want to lead with, and then we can get into it, and then you can we can fill in at the end. But yeah, what are some questions that you have coming into it as a new to BattleTech person?
Yeah, I think the first one, actually probably the main question I have is it's obviously multi-platformed. I mean, it's a video game, it's a tabletop RPG. Oh, and yeah. I guess my question for you is, going back to 1984, what was the original like inception or intent or vision for the game? And then I guess this could take the whole podcast, but where did it develop and why is it in so many different platforms?
Oh, we're gonna take you on a journey.
Yeah, I figured.
Absolutely. We're going to start at the beginning. And we're going to hopefully, no, we'll keep this to like an hour or less. But but we could talk multiple hours, but we won't. We won't do that this time. Okay. Anything else that you kind of want to learn as you go? Like anything that you're I really want to know about this aspect.
So I think that piece about like its origin, where it is and why it is the way it is now. Secondly, I just now, like this year, started getting into like the physical model crafting.
Okay.
And I know that's a thing. And so I guess my question for you, that'd be my second question, is like, where does somebody get involved and like, what does that look like? There's a whole culture around that, I think.
Oh,
my last
absolutely.
Question. Yes. Yeah, my last question for you though is, where does a newbie enter? I mean, there's 40 years of stuff.
Yeah.
Where would a new person enter? What is the best entry and experience?
Yeah. Perfect. No, we will definitely get into that. So, but with that, let's start with this. As far as a kind of visual introduction. So if you are listening to the podcast, I highly recommend that you go check out the YouTube video for this podcast, because we're going to watch an intro video to the, I think, 2018 Harebrained Schemes BattleTech video game. And the reason we're doing that, if you're a BattleTech fan, you know, like this is one of the best like 2 minute introductions to BattleTech. Because it literally, there's no words, it's just visuals, it's like a very cool painted art style, and it takes you from like literally where we kind of are now in humanity all the way 1,000 years into the future where BattleTech's timeline is currently exists. So it's just kind of that explanation. So we're going to do that. And then we will start with the long explanation of... of what is BattleTech. So let's switch over to our presentation. All right. Almost, I switched the wrong thing there, but that's okay. Here we go. Okay, so again, episode 12, let's watch the BattleTech intro cinematic. Like I said, this is the 2018 Harebrained Schemes game. It's on Steam. And it's on Xbox Game Pass. And it's a fantastic turn-based game. So, here we go.
PEGI 12.
XXI16, you know?
Thank you.
Right.
It's good. So I like the art.
Yes, really, it's fantastic art. So tell me your thoughts just from that. Impressions.
So my first question, is that all like Earth and in the Milky Way galaxy and it's all...
That's where it starts. Absolutely. Okay. So it is based in, you know, reality.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because going back and looking at the 80s, the BattleTech timeline goes from the 80s. And so there are things that are in the BattleTech timeline that obviously didn't happen in the time period that we're in now. Like the USSR lasts much longer, you know, just to name a few things. And then there's so many other things as well. It's a fantastic timeline. Starts at Earth. Humanity has launched itself from the stars and is, you know, out in space, which is called the inner sphere. So,
got it. Yeah, I mean, beyond just the cosmetics of like the art and that presentation, first off, amazing. It looks like there's a lot of lore. I mean, in 1,000 years, it looks like it covers. I saw like giant, I say robots. Please correct me if the right
mechs,
name.
Mechs.
There you go.
Yeah.
And huge mechs like taking over. Looks like the entire planet in that one scene. But it seems like, I'm assuming, is that a collection of all the games and releases in one 2-minute video?
Essentially, the 1,000+ years of history for BattleTech, it's all kind of there, and there's a lot of important timelines and dates in that first 1,000 years. But really, when the game started in 1984, it started in the year 3007, 3025, that range. So all of the stuff before that was BattleTech history. And even some of that gets expanded as we continue. Because there are tons of people that love to play. I mean, like I said, that this game, the BattleTech game from 2018, is in like 3025. And then there was expansions for it that progress it forward. People have made mods for it to move it forward even further into the timeline. But yes, essentially, there's like, you know, that 1,000 years kind of history, because I mean, we're in 2024, so 3024, 1,000 years. I mean, we're there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of funny. So all that before, like that, it was basically showing the steps of humanity discovered faster than light travel, which it's called a jump ship. Jump ships are an instantaneous jump. So it's not like hyperspace where it takes time to travel through space. It's just an instant jump, but it can only go so far.
Got it.
And then it takes like 10 days to 2 weeks to recharge the batteries to basically jump again.
Okay.
And then they use these other ships called drop ships that take them from the jump ships down onto planets. Like I said, shows them spreading throughout. And then mechs are, 10 meter, 2-story tall war machines. They're basically walking tanks. They move in a more realistic, in quotation marks here, realistic style than say like mecha in like Japanese anime and stuff like that. So they're not like battle suits that are so honed with the pilot that they're moving like a warrior. But there's still that kind of romanticism of, you know, a pilot is so good that maybe he can move it in like an unnatural way sometimes. So
is otherwise, that as bad, they're is just that like bad tanks. As the Star Wars AT Walker pilots?
Like... Not that bad. No, not that bad. They're choppy, much like... better. So there's something, you know, for the science of BattleTech, two things. Fusion technology exists. And so that's what powers all the mechs and then some vehicles and other things. So fusion. And then, there are gyros that help with stabilizing mechs. And basically a pilot puts a helmet on their head. There's contacts that touch, their head and take the pilot's sense of balance. and send it to the gyro, and that's how they can basically stay standing fairly well, you know.
Got it. So everyone has an Elon Musk Neuralink inside.
Kind of. No, it's really just the helmet. And like, we'll show you some art later, but like the helmets, like especially early art, helmets were like these big, massive, bulky things. You couldn't hardly move your head back and forth, you know. It's like a tiny little visor window. But it's fun. Okay, well.
It's awesome.
Let's jump in to the history of BattleTech. 40 years BattleTech has been around. 1984, it was actually launched as Battle Droids. However, George Lucas took offense to that and very quickly told them, no, I have rights to the word droid. You can't use it. And so, you know,
interesting.
The second edition of BattleTech was literally the same thing as the first edition. So 1 year later, it just said BattleTech on it instead of Battle Droids. So
what an interesting word to have coined, right?
Oh yeah. Like, well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like Android phones, if you remember, there was the Motorola Droid. They had to pay George Lucas to use that word.
What?
Yeah.
That's
he owns that. Well, unless he sold it with Star Wars. I don't know. He may not have. but they were founded by FASA. And FASA held the IP and owned it till about 2001, and then they sold it to WizKids because FASA closed its doors. WizKids had it. Hold on, I may be getting it wrong. There was like WizKids, and then there was some FanPro. I may have reversed those though. But basically, none of them own it now. Tops actually owns it. Actually, this is really weird. Bit of trivia. Tops owns all the tabletop IP rights. Okay. Microsoft owns all the video game rights, and then somebody else entirely owns all the like movie rights. Yeah. It's fantastic. Which is why there's not a BattleTech movie, honestly. You know.
Interesting.
But Catalyst Game Labs is the current IP licensee. And they started they got it in mid-2000s and have kind of relaunched some things in like 2015, I believe. People are going to yell at me. That's fine. they basically started relaunching box sets. They have updated the 3D models, the sculpts for the mechs from some of the really old 80s art and then art that was going on in the 90s and so on.
Yeah.
There's a whole big discussion on the legal stuff around the original mech models because they were bought from a company in Japan to use in the U.S. while Robotech was using them in basically the Eastern Hemisphere, and they were, you know, supposed, you know, big legal stuff happened. They ended up having to change it in the 90s and redo the artwork for the original mechs. So if you ever see Robotech, you might be like, wait a second, I'm pretty sure that looks just like a BattleTech model, because they were going on at the same time, and they literally did not end legal stuff until 2018, 2019, 2020.
Oh wow, okay,
yeah,
it's like 30 plus years.
Oh yeah, I
was gonna say, it sounds like a rough start, right?
It was like a money grab by the company in Japan that basically, they bought a company that had licensed the mechs to the company that had licensed them to FASA. And then there was this big argument, no, you didn't have the rights to actually license it. Blah, 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 blah. Stupid. We're not even going to go to that. but, yes, exactly. But to get back into it, there are all sorts of mediums for BattleTech and MechWarrior, which is also the same universe. MechWarrior is typically the simulator video games, so from the cockpit, and then BattleTech is usually the top down, whether it's strategy on the tabletop or it's strategy in on a video game. There's also been there's a MechWarrior pen and paper TTRPG. But it started in 1984 as a miniatures war game. So if you're looking at the presentation, that's the original box set. It came with the hex gridded maps. It came with the little plastic models and die cutouts, and then the rule books and stuff like that. That's where it started.
So just for my clarity, when you say like top down strategy, like basically StarCraft, is it that kind of?
Similar. Although StarCraft as a video game is a real time strategy, BattleTech game from Harebrained Schemes is a turn based.
Got it. Okay.
So it's, you know, move here, move here, move here, shoot this, shoot this, shoot this, and then, you know, it plays out a turn, and then you do it again. So like Baldur's Gate or XCOM.
I was just about to ask.
Absolutely. Okay. For current reference.
Action, bonus action. Okay.
Yes. And there's, you know, in the video game, there is things that you can get better initiative. So maybe your pilot goes earlier in the turn order, stuff like that. It's a really great game, honestly. And a great story, too.
Yeah.
But yes, tabletop miniature war game is where it started. There is the TTRPG, MechWarrior. There was a BattleTech TCG, trading card game.
Oh, cool.
That was very similar to Magic in its mechanics. And that was big in the 90s. There's a group that, so it's not in production anymore, but there is a group that's kind of trying to revive it a little bit. Now, and they've got like print on demand and are even like updating artwork and doing some other. So there's some cool stuff with that, but that was a lot of fun. I have some of those somewhere in my collection over here.
So what do you attribute the, like the ending of that? Cause like you could argue with Pokemon, you know,
Pokemon probably.
Oh, you think so? You think it just killed it?
Yeah, probably. Okay. So yes and no, I will say that. I'm sure there are reasons out there, and if you know why the TCG, you know, basically went out of production, please let me know in the comments or, you know, social media, whatever.
Super interesting.
But I growing up in the 80s and 90s, I was playing the TCG. I knew Magic: The Gathering was also gaining in popularity during that time. Mm-hmm. And there was a Star Wars one too at the time, but I didn't really have anything to do with that. But then in like, oh man, I'm trying to think, like 96 or 97, when Pokemon came to the US and started becoming very popular, all of the card games really suffered, honestly. And so I think game stores probably stopped carrying it. I mean, it was still something that BattleTech fans loved, but we were not as big as we are now, even though that was a pretty big IP for the time.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I think they're making a comeback. This has nothing to do, you know, with this, but Magic's getting into some new Magic and D&D, you know, partner together, and they're creating.
There's a Magic in Lord of the Rings. There's Magic.
That's right.
Wizard of the Coast is partnering with everybody and trying to grab anything they can right now. So
I feel like now's the time for, sorry, last thing. I feel like now's the time for BattleTech to come back. Like the trading card game seems to be making a comeback, and that would be, there's no space.
Yeah. It's definitely a fan
military type. You know.
There's not. Yeah, not really. Although Star Wars has done a few, and they're actually launching a new one in a month.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize they were still.
Yeah, Star Wars is launching a new CCG in a month called Star Wars Unlimited. So, but this is not about that. So, so miniature war game, TTRPG, trading card game, video games. And it's been on every platform, pretty much. There was a cartoon. It's been comics, novels, audiobooks, music, and toys, and more, honestly. Like, there's been other things, too. But there has been... BattleTech has been in everything, as far as medium-wise. And so, yeah, it's been... There's a lot of people that have come in from all the different types of medium. currently there has been three wildly successful Kickstarter campaigns. There was a Harebrained Schemes video game. It was actually a Kickstarter campaign, and like I said, launched in 2018. It raised $2.7 million. And they had not made a strategy Battletech video game since early 2000s. Then there was the two tabletops from Catalyst Game Labs. There was the Clan Invasion Kickstarter, which raised $2.5 million, and then more after the fact. And then there was the more recent Mercenaries Kickstarter, which launched last year and should be fulfilling in the next, hopefully, 6 months. And it raised...
Seth promised.
Yeah. Months. Oh, no, they're shooting for spring. They're shooting for spring, but who knows.
7.6 million,
yes. I think it was in the top... Definitely the top 20. I can't remember if they broke top 15 Kickstarters of all time.
That's great.
Not just Game Space, but like...
Yeah.
You know. Or maybe that was Game Space. I don't know. It was last year. Sure. All those numbers.
Still. Crazy.
But yeah, fantastic. Also some fun facts. Barnes & Noble and Target both have exclusive products for Battletech. Target's was a pretty big grab. That. Meaning box sets of some kind.
Box set.
Yeah, so you can see it, but our listeners, our viewers cannot. But this is the Battletech Essentials box. You can pick it up at your local Target in the United States. So it's, unfortunately, this one is U.S. only. But it's $25. So, also, Solus, mind starting and stopping and restarting your video? You froze.
Yeah, your audio is also cutting in and out.
Is it? That's fantastic.
I mean, it seemed like.
Yeah, you're coming through super digital. Let's see. We are at 28 minutes, so I'm going to remember that.
Let me perhaps jump out and jump back in.
Give me
1 second. Oh, it looks like we're good
you're
now.
Back. You're back now. Yeah.
Goodness. Well, I guess it was on my end. Interesting.
I don't know. It's also looking on my end. It doesn't look like it's... Which I don't know why. So,
I think we're good now. Just don't sneeze.
Just don't do anything. I'm gonna close all don't these move. Other windows here. That's what's happening. So, we are professionals, folks.
this is our first time ever recording a podcast.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. So Barnes & Noble.
So let me real quick. I did not hear your response on the exclusive.
Oh, product. Perfect. So, okay, so Barnes & Noble. Yeah. And Target, so Barnes & Noble has had exclusive box sets. They didn't have a full box set. They had a what's called a force pack, and it was a set of four miniatures with pilot cards. Okay. And so they got that a few years ago. Mm. It is their first exclusive set is now available at other places, but they have a new one. That coin that launched at the same time as the Kickstarter last year. So they have another one. But then Target said, we want a box set that can be everything you need to play and is exclusive to us. We don't know yet how long the exclusivity with Target is supposed to last. But this is it right here. This is the Battletech Essentials box. And... you can get it from Target for $25, unless it's on sale, which is then even cheaper. But it comes with two plastic miniatures. Now we're having problems again, aren't we?
We are.
Goodness gracious. It's Discord is what it is.
So is your bottom left your video connected to going red or green?
Is which one?
So, yeah. So the bottom left where it says video connected, it has like on Discord. Was it showing red or green just then?
Oh, no. It's like gray. It's like struggling at the moment.
I wonder what's going on.
I don't know. because the server is definitely boosted. So I should not be having problems. It may be having a problem with the me showing that box off. We'll see.
Yeah.
Honestly, because, yeah, I won't do that again. But anyway, that box set is available at Target. If you missed it, for $25. But here's the kicker. There is a coupon in the BattleTech Essentials box for $20 off the Catalyst Game Labs website. So not 20%, $20. So
that's great.
That covers most of that could cover any of the some of the books. That could cover one of the force packs. The force packs are between $20 and $35. And so yeah, you know, that's essentially like a $5 investment, and then whatever you spend on there. So
yeah.
But what I was saying, again, it's two plastic miniatures. It's got maps. It has the record sheets, which are like D&D character sheets. And so that's the difference between like BattleTech and 40K. Well, so now we actually kind of have multiple modes for tabletop BattleTech. Mm-hmm. But traditional classic BattleTech, and classic is what the traditional BattleTech is called, uses a record sheet that is a full 8.5 by 11, and it's like a D&D character sheet. You've got an armor diagram. You fill in, you roll to see where you get hit, if you get your mech gets hit in the arm, and then you know take off damage, and then eventually you like, you know, go through the armor and start doing damage to the internals, and you destroy weapons and maybe hit ammo and make it explode. And, you know, you could, you know, hit the pilot, blow the head off. You know, there's, you could do so much damage. You knock it over. You could blow an arm off. You could go over and pick up the arm and then go beat him with it. I mean, you can literally do almost anything, in the tabletop game. And so it's a lot of fun. Then there's another version of it called Alpha Strike. We'll touch on that in a minute. Sure. It hasn't been out as long, but it is a faster paced. And instead of using a full page record sheet, it has some like little cards that you use. And those cards have truncated stats, essentially. And so it's meant to play with like a larger force and take less time.
Got it. Okay.
So
yeah,
that's a difference. Like, you know, you've seen Warhammer where it's like, you've got a 2,000-point army, yep, and you've got 100 minis on the table, right, and it's really impressive, but it's also super expensive to get into.
Can't even imagine.
BattleTech, I mean, literally, so also in the box set that I showed you a second ago, there are also the cardboard standees. Cardboard standees, yep, or paper standees that are from official Catalyst box sets or even from their print-on-demand stuff, they're legal even in tournaments. You don't have to have painted minis for official tournaments. You can use those according to their rules. Now, that may change in the future, but
yeah,
those are all permissible. There are people online who have 3D models that will 3D print them, and BattleTech as a community is pretty open to it, but for official tournaments and stuff like that, those are not allowed necessarily. Mm. And we like to support, you know, the product because we want more product. So
yeah, makes total sense.
But yeah, it's yeah. I mean, you could technically put down like glass beads and play a game of BattleTech with it. You know, use it for different units or infantry or tanks, because it's not just mechs. It's full range combined arms. You know, military tactical battles. So
very cool.
So yeah, sorry, we're kind of slowing down here for a second, but Phil Spencer, in a recent interview after the EA Activision buyout, talked about Mech Assault, which was the Xbox and console version of MechWarrior, as being an IP that he would love to bring back. Because somebody was like, "What's one that you would love to bring back?" Because there was some Mech Assault games on the Xbox and even like Game Boy Advanced.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, and there was, yeah, exactly. There was Super Nintendo MechWarrior games, BattleTech games. Really? There was PlayStation games. Yeah. So
yeah,
goes back. PC obviously was the first video games. And so, yeah, there's, it's been around, for sure.
Yeah.
And then also too, right now, the current games are that BattleTech game we watched the intro for. There is MechWarrior Online, which is a free to play, just kind of arena, simulator game for, you know, being a MechWarrior. And then there's MechWarrior 5, which is the most recent MechWarrior game. And it's on Game Pass as well as Steam. And so you can, if you have Game Pass, you can try it out. So,
yeah.
And they're coming out with a new version of it for the Clan Invasion, which is a big thing in the BattleTech timeline.
Yeah.
In a, you know, in the next year or two. So,
well, if I may, like that, I wish more games did that. Like how many times do you start a game and you're like, man, I really wish there was like a tabletop module. I really wish there was like XYZ. And it sounds like this is like covering the gambit. I mean, it's
absolutely. And there are, it's really cool. There are digital tools for playing the tabletop games online as well. There are, Tabletop Simulator on Steam. There are several mods for both classic. So there are mods for Tabletop Simulator modules. That's what they're called. Yeah. For not only the classic game, but also Alpha Strike, and the card game to play virtually in Tabletop Simulator. And then there's a tool called Megamech, which is just BattleTech Classic. But it has the tools to even run like campaigns and stuff. Because the thing about BattleTech is that it's absolutely a war game. You can sit down across from each other, just duke it out, you know. You can also have objectives. But one of the things where it shines is that you can actually go through a campaign, much like a TTRPG. And you can, you know, keep track of your forces and keep track of damage. I mean, you can get very granular with it. So it's a lot of fun. But yeah, and MechWarrior Online, I've actually, like, a bunch of the podcast creators and a whole bunch of other people have started having like Friday night game nights for MechWarrior Online recently. So it's been a resurgence of my own to get back into that game. So,
And what is that again? Because when you say arena, I'm thinking like Magic the Gathering.
I say arena. So MechWarrior is all the simulation games. Sitting in the cockpit of a mech. You can configure the mech different ways, but it is an action. You know, it is a simulation shooter game. Essentially, you're in a mech. It's not fast like a shooter, because some of them are slow and pondering. Some of them are light and fast and scouts. But yeah, it's a simulation. So,
got it. A
lot of fun. Okay, so now we're going to jump into the lore a little bit. I'm not going to cover everything, but yes, the lore honestly is, again, one of the greatest strengths of BattleTech. It's absolutely fantastic. There has been books. There's been over 100 novels. There has been comics and novellas, collections of short stories in omnibuses, as well as the current iteration of that, which is called Shrapnel. And it's a magazine of fiction that people submit, and then it goes through a process and becomes part of the lore, becomes part of the canon.
Interesting.
And they're short stories, essentially. You know, usually they're not, affecting large events.
Sure.
But it would be like if you and I created a little homebrew campaign for BattleTech in this side of the universe on this planet. You know, now they say don't do that. Don't try to put yourself into it. Create a good, unique story. But that's essentially what it is. You know, you have an idea in your head, you've got some characters. It could be about a technician on a jump ship, just trying to live his life, you know. And then there's some of the tales are of a bar where people come in and tell stories. And that's literally, you know, one of the modes through which the lens through which they tell some of the stories there.
Sure.
But yeah, anyone can submit, you know, and obviously it has to go through the process, but anyone can submit to Shrapnel. And if it's good enough, it gets published. So
tracking. So Shrapnel is like short story submissions. Mm-hmm. This 100 published novels, is that all licensed?
Those were like,
or is that fan fiction as well?
No, those were all licensed. Those were commissioned. Those were given to authors with a story in mind. So like I said, BattleTech started in 1984.
Yeah.
The first novel was Decision at Thunder Rift. So if you're looking at the fiction slide in the presentation, it came out in, well, goodness gracious, now I'm forgetting, 1986, I believe. Let me just make sure of that so that people don't yell at me. There is an exhaustive BattleTech wiki called Sarna.
Okay.
It's sarna.net.
I'm digging that paint job though on the cover.
Yes, yes. Like, and this is the funny thing. There's four covers on there. Those are all the same book. That's just throughout the years.
I didn't even check that.
Yeah. Okay. So the most recent is the bottom right. The first is the top left.
Got it.
And I do love the paint job too, the kind of white with yellow.
Yeah. It's almost like line stripes or.
Yeah. Cool. So. 1986. So that's when the fiction started. So before that, there was a short booklet in the original box sets that had information on the worlds, had a little bit of some story stuff coming out about it, and then it had like five mercenary units that were part of it, and there was like a paragraph of fiction about each one, and more. And then in 1986, Decision at Thunder Rift came out, and it was the introduction. It is the beginning of BattleTech fiction, and they are still some of the best books to get started into the BattleTech universe. It's a trilogy, and it is a small lens of which to look at BattleTech. It is about one guy, the troubles that he goes through. He starts a mercenary unit, starts with like three or four mechs, and then the struggles that he goes through to keep the unit together, to avoid destruction, things that happen in the world. And then there's another trilogy that came out late 80s, early 90s, called the Warrior Trilogy. And that trilogy is often looked at as the best starting point to look at the universe as a whole, because it talks about all the major factions and the rulers of those factions and the orchestrating of things that are happening within the universe of BattleTech, which is known as the Inner Sphere. And BattleTech is, at its heart, a Game of Thrones. Because that intro video that we watched earlier, it, you know, humanity rose. There's like lots of cool history and lore you can read to get to that. They founded the Star League, which was like the pinnacle of peace and success. Granted, the Star League was founded because they conquered pretty much everybody. besides the periphery, which if you're looking at the map, is the outskirts of humanity. And then the Star League fell apart. And when the Star League fell apart, there were five great houses. Those five great houses all said, well, we deserve to be the head of the Star League and claim the title of Star Lord, you know, kind of thing. And they all said, no, you can't be it. No, you can't be it. And so then it started 400 plus years of war called the Succession Wars.
Got it.
But I have bullet points, so let me read them because before I get too ahead of it. humanity leaves Earth and colonizes the stars in 2103. So, you know, 100 years from now, it would be like, oh, yeah, they leave. Now, granted, in the BattleTech timeline, fusion power is like already developed by 2024.
We're not there.
The Star League was created in 2571. That was in the video. The Star League Ameris Civil War in 2766 is what began the breaking of the Star League. In 2784, the is when basically the Civil War ended, and then the head of the Star League army, General Alexander Kerensky, who's a very important person in BattleTech lore, he basically took most of the Star League army, not all of them, but most of them, and he left. He just trucked it out of known space, jumped out into the unknown, and no one heard from him. So then we had about 400 years of civil war called the Succession Wars, Game of Thrones in space, before Game of Thrones, obviously. But it's awesome because it's a very human story, right? Like the whole thing about BattleTech, it's a very human story. It's not it's not science fantasy like Star Wars. It's not the clean cut sci-fi with aliens that is Star Trek.
Sure.
It's a very human centric story. And
it
so,
seems like a feasible future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's obviously certain liberties with science, like fusion and, you know, the fact that a 2-story 100-ton mech wouldn't just sink into the ground instead of walking. there's issues there, you know, but we just don't think about that.
Complications.
So basically from 2786 to 3030 were the Succession Wars. There's 4 Succession Wars. They lasted many decades each. And then in 3050, we had the Klan invasion. Spoiler alert, General Kerensky's descendants came back. They basically went off for 400 years. They started their own society. They became known as the Klans, where he basically, in order to survive, they formed a rigid caste system where warriors are on top, might makes right, and even starting like something crazy, you think like eugenics programs where like warriors were bred and then, you know, born in labs and, you know, pinnacle of humanity, kind of like idealistic stuff, right? Also sure. Kind of messed up. But we all kind of like them too. Not everybody, but a lot of people still like them. They invaded the Inner Sphere. Their technology was crazy high because they went off and developed all this technology. Whereas in the Inner Sphere, during the Succession Wars, everyone basically bombed each other almost to the Stone Age, but with mechs still. And so there's a kind of romanticism that a lot of people, there is a large group of people still that only want to play in the 30-25, 30-30 timeline because they want to use the original old school tech. They like the whole thing with mechs during that time were that they were so old, they were hundreds of years old, that they were handed down through noble houses. And we had basically the entirety of the Inner Sphere was like a neo-feudalism. So you've got nobles and their kids, you know, they are the mech warriors, and maybe they have enough money and clout that they have a unit of mechs, whether it's 4 mechs or 12 mechs, and they have pilots for them, and all of those pilots are basically, you know, raised up in society.
That's cool.
Like I said, very kind of feudalistic, and so it's pretty cool. Yeah. Also, because of the Civil Wars, people know how to repair mechs, but they don't know really how to make them. During the 3025 era, they know how. There's like a few factories that still produce jump ships, but the science of how to actually develop them, no one knows, you know, kind of thing. And then, like I said, the Klans invade. They've got so much better technology. They're just, it's crazy. It takes a while before the Inner Sphere is able to withstand them and start to defeat them. But the Klans also come with this like rigid sense of honor. They like to do honor duels, and they would come in and say, we're going to attack. Who are you defending with? And so they would say, well, I've got a regiment defending this planet. And the regiment could be combined arms, or it could be 36 mechs. Or the 36 mechs would be a battalion. It could be 108 mechs. And so they would say, okay, well, we'll bid with each other and we'll come in with like half that, because their technology was so good that they could literally come in with half that and still wipe the floor with them. So,
sure.
Question from the audience.
I got many questions.
Oh, sure.
So the clan invasion, you said the General Alexander, I didn't get the last name.
Kerensky.
Kerensky.
Yes, Kerensky. So
he himself didn't come back 400 years later.
No, it was just the descendants.
I didn't know if they invented like some sort of life.
So it's extension. No, they didn't. They did not. And in fact, in the clan society, average lifespan is much shorter, because if you don't die in battle, you're a failure almost. So if you make it to old age, you're either really good or you're a failure. And if you're not really good, they have ways to basically say, okay, if you're really good, then you've basically survived. And because they grow the next generation in a lab and raise children communally as the warrior caste, they don't give them last names, and they use the genetic material from each previous generation to improve upon it. And so then you have to earn a surname, and there's like 25 spots. They're called blood names. There's 25 spots in a blood name house, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so there's only 25 people who would have the last name Kerensky.
Got it.
Or there'd be 25 people that have some other last name. And each clan has, you know, 20 or 30 names that they allow to go forward. Now, of course, not everyone in the clans does that. That's just the warrior caste. The scientists, the traders, the local government, stuff like that, they are all still normal society, basically living under the clan caste system.
Sure.
So, super complicated. But because of that, there are Kerenskys, and they have, you know, there are all these other people that when they return and they finally allow people to know their last names, they're like, oh my gosh, like that's... this person's named Kerensky. How are they named Kerensky? You know, stuff like that. So
it makes me think, and I think there's a lot of stories that kind of sort of relate to this, but it makes me think of Metal Gear Solid, right? Cause like you find out Solid Snake, all the enemies you've been fighting come from his bloodline, and it's an effort to like create this ultimate soldier. And that's just interesting.
Very much. Yeah. That's very much the clan's way of doing things. And so they test to be warriors in their teens and, you know, and like I said, if once you, like you're, when you're in your 30s, it's like in the clans, you are now old and past your prime in your 30s. Yeah. But in the Inner Sphere, it's more normal society.
Sure.
You're just hitting your prime in your 30s. Like you've had a military career and you've, you know, moved up the ranks, and maybe you're in command of, you know, 12 mechs and an infantry division and a tanker, you know, division, you know, so.
Sure.
Much different.
And then that makes me think of like the Vikings in Valhalla, right? Like,
oh,
it's
yeah.
an honor
oh,
to die early, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There is a Valhalla there as well.
Oh, is there?
It's
nice.
There's also a game world called Solaris. This is a tangent. I did not plan to talk about this. There's a game world called Solaris. Sure. And the essentials box that I showed a minute ago, it is actually based on Solaris, and it's like gladiatorial combat. Most often 1v1. You know, people do die sometimes, but most of the time they don't. But it's like, you know, broadcast all over the Inner Sphere, and there is a club, a bar called Valhalla, and all the greatest warriors basically have seats at the table in Valhalla, kind of thing. So it's more fun, you know. And that's another cool thing too about BattleTech, is that because it is based on humanity, each one of the different houses will have like a major culture based on a culture from Earth or Terra. But they're also all a little bit of a melting pot. And so you've got the Draconis Combine, which is ruled by House Kurita, and they are very much based on feudal Japanese culture. But there are also, you know, people of Nordic descent, and there are people of mixed races and nationalities that are part of that society. It's not just Japanese, ancestry, essentially. And then there's one that's very much like the Germanic, Anglo-Saxon kind of. And then there's one that's like a, like I said, it covers everything. And then individual planets could be different cultures and you know, things like that too. So there's so much room. It's a big, diverse world. And like I said, kind of like Star Wars, where you could land on a planet and have a completely different, cool story and atmosphere. Same with Battletech. But just humans.
Yeah.
So 3050 was a clan invasion. That was happened in like the early 1990s is when it happened in our world. And so going up to our year 2000, as far as the product, took us through the Civil War. There was a Civil War between two nations that had joined together, and then brother and sister were kind of fought and torn apart, had a Civil War. And when that happened in real life, that was when 2001 FASA shut their doors, sold the IP. And so then the people who took over after that said, well, we want a refresh. So let's move forward 80 years. And we're like, what's going on? Who are these characters? Where are the characters that we knew and loved? You didn't even write to tell us what happened with them. Like, we just ended on a cliffhanger, reset. And so there was this hard reset. A lot of people dropped off. We call them the Dark Ages. They also literally call them in the novels the Dark Ages. But there was a Civil War. There was something called the Word of Blake, which were started as this kind of techno religious group. And they basically had a crusade. There's a word that we on YouTube try not to use very often. It starts with a J. You can kind of guess what that is. But there's, there was this crusade. Everyone was against them. That lasted a few years. And then, like I said, timeline, as far as the fans were concerned, it jumped forward from 3081 to 3130, 3140.
Wow.
But Catalyst did a really good job of bridging the gap, backfilling a little bit. We also didn't have novels for a long time. They were just kind of giving us fiction in the source books.
Okay.
Because there was real life things happening with printing, with printing books at the time. That we've now know about, but we didn't at the time. And so there was just, it was hard to get things printed and shipped out. So
that's interesting.
But yeah, so current timeline, we're at 3150. It's called the Ill Clan era. And we have enough fiction that we all kind of know where we're at now. We know what happened to a lot of those characters, and stuff like that. So that's the full 100 years of lore that we have consumed over the last 40. So
where would you say the majority of books lie?
So
like just scattered throughout all of
the majority of them. And I would say about 70 of the books, there was a bundle on Humble Bundle recently, and it was like the first 65 or 67 books.
Wow.
And they were, kind of called legacy books or legends books. And it was from 3025 to 3067, 30, whatever. And then the Dark Ages started, they moved forward. So, but we still had 40 or 50 books there as well. Now at this point, it just covered more time because we had 60, 70 books that covered basically a 25 to 30 year period.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was a very slow start too. There's some of those Dark Age novels that the fans really did not like. And it was just, it was, like I said, it was a rough period for the IP.
Sure.
So.
Almost like it was a dark age.
It was a dark age. Absolutely. Pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to hurry through because we're at an hour.
We could talk forever, buddy.
We could. Okay. Products. There are the Essentials box from Target. All the box sets are kind of like this box, but they started with the beginner box and a game of armored combat. Beginner box is also $25. Same setup, two mechs, maps, rule books, truncated rule book. Then there's a game of armored combat. It's $60. Usually you can get it for about $45 on Amazon. It comes with eight mechs, two maps, and a little bit more detailed rules. Clan Invasion was kind of an add-on to the Game of Armored Combat. Came with five mechs, which in BattleTech you've got the military breakdown, like the TONE breakdown in the Inner Sphere is four mechs as a lance, three lances as a company, three companies as a battalion, and three to five companies, three to five, are a battalion, and then three battalions are a regiment. When the clans came in, they were like, no, we're not going to do that. We have a unit of five, and it's called a star. And so they would have five, military units. It could be five mechs. It could be five mechs. Another thing the clans introduced was powered battle armor. And because they also genetically bred infantry to be bigger, stronger, faster, crazier.
Is this like Halo type?
Oh yeah.
Powered armor?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. They're called in the clans call them elementals, and they're, probably 2 feet taller than you and I, or 3 feet taller even. They're massive, but very fast, quick. Like I said, genetically bred over 400 years. And then they wear this battle armor. And they're a little insane. They will jump on mechs. They will rip holes in it. They will shoot, joints. But they also, because they're in this powered battle armor, they do have a few mech-powered weapons that can actually fight against mechs. But there's conventional infantry. There's tanks, motorized infantry, VTOLs, aerospace, or, fighters. Like, all of it is part of BattleTech.
I feel like this podcast is like longer than we expected because I keep interjecting.
No, it's fine.
So it's my fault. But what I'm doing,
my longest was like an hour and 40 minutes. So we're okay.
Let's go. Challenge accepted. The way my brain operates, because again, this is all new to me and I'm kind of soaking it in, right? I have to relate it to something I already know. And like right now I'm thinking Titanfall, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you said running around, jumping on mechs and kind of doing that thing, I'm thinking like the Titanfall game.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as like infantry attacking them, absolutely. Yes. The Titans are mechs essentially.
Yeah.
Loved that game. Fantastic game. Yeah.
The first one.
Second one was good too. It just wasn't, what we all wanted.
Yeah.
But yeah, except, those Titans are still not that big.
Sure.
Again, mechs are upwards of 10 meters tall. They go from 20 tons to 100 tons.
Huge. Yeah.
And there's hundreds of them, honestly. And then there's different configurations for each one. There could be 3 to 10 different configurations for each mech. Just like you look at technology in our world, like, the US was creating these tanks. Well, now they sold these tanks to another country, and those tanks are being made in that country now. It's right. a little older. But maybe they tweaked them and they brought them up to try to be current, tech spec.
Yeah.
But they changed a few things. Like they put a laser where a missile rack was or something. It could be any of those things. So
sure.
And that's part of what makes it fun too, because you can customize mechs. Like they have rules in the rule book to make your own or to completely customize it. And there's rules for construction and you have to follow you can only have, this is your tonnage limit for a medium mech.
Yeah.
This is, the engine size you can put in it. This is the weapon. This is the limitations. There's also heat. A fusion engine creates heat. Imagine that. Mm. Weapons firing create heat. Imagine that. You have to limit your heat or you cook yourself alive. So,
makes total sense.
There's, like I said, it's, the one of the coolest things too, though, even though there's been rules that have expanded, unlike Warhammer, the rules have remained the same for the most part since 1984. Unlike, like I said, Warhammer, they change rules like every 2 or 3 years, and
right.
and those rules can't be played anymore in official play.
Yeah.
You could find BattleTech books at a used bookstore, and they are going to be probably 90% accurate.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So
that's one of the issues I had with Magic: The Gathering is when I first got
same
into
thing,
Magic,
right? Same thing with card games.
A lot of the cards were nulled.
Yeah, that and that's why I, as I grew up and was like, man, I not need to be spending this kind of money on collectible cards.
That's right.
Because, you know, a new set would come out and then you're not supposed to play with them anymore, right? Again, BattleTech has been the advantage in that it doesn't have that. You can still play with mechs, like plastic and metal, because there's metal miniatures as well. There's a company that does them in metal as opposed to in the resin, so...
Very cool.
But yeah, there's another box set called Alpha Strike box set that's recent. It's $80, but it comes with 13 mechs, and it also comes with cardboard buildings and trees. Because classic BattleTech using a hex grid and the record sheets has been the game since 1984. But Alpha Strike is about, somebody's going to correct me, but 20 years old. In its entirety. And it, like I said, it uses smaller cards. You don't have the full iron, you don't have the full armor diagram. Instead, you just have like, oh, I've got like 6 points of armor and 3 points of health. And so instead of controlling 1 to 4 mechs, maybe, and playing a game over 2 or 3 hours, you could probably, a lot of people will control 12 or 15 mechs and they'll play it in, 90 minutes to 2 hours kind of thing.
Very cool.
Both versions can be played on tables with terrain. There are rules for both.
Yep.
But Alpha Strike. So Alpha Strike is not. Alpha Strike is more like Warhammer and other games where you have a tape measure and you say, they can move 18 inches.
Yeah.
And then, there's, like I said, it's meant to be faster paced, meant to be picked up easily. Some people argue that it's easier to pick up. I tend to think that the classic is easier to pick up. One, I grew up with it, but two, even for kids, it's a lot easier to understand how to move on a map, like a hex grid, and say, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 movement points. It takes a movement point to turn, and then another movement point to continue on.
100%.
Also, too, it's a little easier because kids can't understand the nuance of strategy, which you can get a lot more into when you've got 15 mechs as opposed to 2.
Yeah.
So,
that's right.
But they're both awesome games. They both have massive following. And so, yeah, they're fantastic. And most places around the country and the world play both. So
very interesting.
And then force packs, you can buy mechs individually. You can buy them in these force packs of 4 or 5. And they're, like I said, there's hundreds of mechs out there. Let me show some of that product. Sorry, I have slacked on my presentation because we were talking about the lore. Now I'm showing you a map of the Inner Sphere. Like I said, there's the 5 great houses.
I love how they're called houses and you made the reference to Game of Thrones.
Like I told you, this predates Game of Thrones, but they are called houses. Yeah. Well, they're nations, but then the rulers of those nations are called houses. So you've got House Davion, which is the Federated Sons. Like I said, and even within, there's factions within factions within factions.
Sure.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Here are all the different version box sets leading up to when Catalyst Game Labs took over. And then actually they did a couple of those too. And then these are the box sets that are currently in print. There's 2 beginner box sets, Game of Armored Combat, Clan Invasion, Essentials Box, and Alpha Strike. And make sure I'm not missing one. No, I think I got them. So, but again, you know what we talked about too, like BattleTech history and fiction are fantastic. And the artwork is also amazing.
Yeah, I was kind of
love the artwork. Yeah, it's fantastic. This piece and the one after it, it's actually kind of one piece, but this was like the central piece for the Mercenaries Kickstarter, which launched last year. Hence the name, big focus on mercenaries. Because there are hundreds of mercenary units across the Inner Sphere, and all the governments, and you know, from the great house governments to a local planetary government, may hire mercenaries. And so there's a thriving mercenary market, and so it's pretty cool.
I would definitely take a mouse pad. These look like mouse pads.
Oh yeah, they'd be fantastic as mouse pads, right? Yeah,
that'd be sick, man.
But yeah, these are some of the mercenaries. And then here, as to your question earlier, here are some of the miniatures.
So cool.
That so people cool. have painted. Now these definitely are some of the top tier professional painted. These two specifically are actually by a friend in one of my communities. Who goes by Brushido. He's one of the professionals. He does a lot of stuff for Catalyst even, but they're fantastic miniatures.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. These are two others that have, so that the one on the right, the red and white one, that is one of the miniatures in the BattleTech Essentials box.
Okay.
And it's the Solaris, you know, gladiatorial paint scheme for that mech. It's a famous mech in BattleTech lore. It's called Yin Lo Wang. The pilot for it was the Solaris champion, and he was famous for having a medium mech, but he had replaced the normal cannon in the right arm with a bigger cannon, and so you know it was really cool in the lore. Yeah. And then the one on the left is a commission that looks like one of the source books paint schemes that was from the 90s. So
kind of details, incredible.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And they're not as detailed as say Warhammer miniatures. If you buy them in metal or if you buy the premium plastic ones, you do have to construct them a little bit, but at most it's going to be leg, torso, arm, you know, kind of thing. It's not quite the same as like Warhammer where you've got like super detailed stuff.
Yeah.
Because the scale is 6 millimeters, meaning a human is 6 millimeters to the scale of these mechs. The mechs themselves are anywhere between 20 to 35 millimeters in size. So.
Sure. Yeah, those are incredible.
Yeah. So that is the product. There are, like I said, there are games. I don't have images of the video games, but they started in the 90s. There were a couple of games called Crescent Hawks Deception and Crescent Hawks Revenge. They're very 8-bit, awesome graphics, but again, managing a mercenary unit. And then there was MechWarrior 1, which was the first one that actually have three-dimensional graphics. There was Polygons. We had a few Polygons. Nice. And I played a ton of MechWarrior 1 in the 90s because we had three computers in my house. My mom ran a business out of our home, and me and my friends would sit at each of the computers. We weren't networked together necessarily with MechWarrior 1 because we were playing off floppy disks, but we were all playing together in the same room, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with Windows 95, we had MechWarrior 2. And that was put out by Microsoft. Yeah. And you could actually connect and play multiplayer. That's still a fan favorite. But yeah, we're up to 5 now. As far as the MechWarrior games, there was, like I said, games for PlayStation and Sega and Nintendo and Xbox. And yeah, it's such a rich universe of products. So... any other questions before we kind of wrap it up?
No, I don't think questions. I think like I am a huge, and you know me, we've been long time friends.
Absolutely.
for me, like, the lore is why I do things. It's mm-hmm. the why I play. It's the why I stick with it. So the fact that this is 40 years worth of it, it sounds pretty intricate. It sounds pretty deep.
Sure.
And, like, a well-rounded
and it
lore.
It sounds daunting. But I promise it's not hard to get into.
When you said 65 books, I'm like,
that's
just the legends,
the old ones. Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, oh my god, I don't know if I could read that in a year or not. But man, but, yeah, I think that's exciting, right?
Yeah,
it gives me reason to kind of go. And I will say this: the one thing I absolutely will commit to you and all your listeners and viewers, I'm being serious, I'm committing right now. I will absolutely start reading the books like that.
Yeah.
That is something that that's what I'm about.
Well, let me tell you about a friend podcast of ours called Of Mex and Men. So okay. Instead of Mice and Men, it's Of Mex and Men. They are a BattleTech book club podcast. Now they are reading through the novels starting at the beginning, but they are, they put out one a week, usually on Wednesdays. And they cover about 5 chapters at a time. Now, I read way faster than that. So I did actually restart the novels. But we see each other enough. We can definitely talk about any of the novels that, you know. And I can definitely send you some as well.
Sure.
To get started on.
Yeah.
But they are, they're covering it. And they do a fantastic job. One of the guys on the podcast had never read them before. And so they're kind of going through, and they're fun to listen to as well. So, cause I know you're a podcast fan, but yeah.
A little bit.
Like I said, Friday nights are MWO nights, MechWarrior Online nights. And there are at any given time, 5 or 6 different BattleTech podcasts represented in the Friday night game nights. And so that's kind of one of the third things, you know, we've got awesome lore. We've got pretty good products, especially now. We have a lot of product that you can find on shelves. Not just at Target and Barnes and Noble, which Barnes and Noble does carry a good amount of product. But your local game stores obviously are going to have more, and Target just carries the essential box, but hey, it's a gateway, and they ordered like, I don't know, like 40,000 units of it or something. It was crazy. Nice. To put in all their stores. You know, it was definitely seen as like a big win, right? You know,
sure.
Sitting next to the D&D Essentials box in Target, looks pretty good. So,
yeah,
but yeah, it's going, there's product available. Like we went through a time where it was hard to get product, hard to get books, but now it's a fantastic time to get into it because there's so much product available that it's easy to get. It's a lot cheaper than Warhammer or some of the other miniatures games out there.
Sure.
And the rules haven't changed. So people who played before and came back to it are easily able to jump back in and don't have to worry about learning a completely new rule set. And bring people with them. So
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. The community's pretty great. Occasionally, like all communities and all games, you know, in the last 5 years have had issues with people that get mad at each other for, you know, things outside of the game and universe. Imagine you know a bit what I'm talking about. Yeah. But for the most part, the community is fantastic. It's a lot. It's, you know, welcoming. And like I said, there are so many ways to get into the BattleTech universe. That it's a lot of fun. So
seems like there's a flavor for everything, for everybody. Yep,
absolutely. That's absolutely. Awesome. But yeah, any other thoughts or questions?
I mean, it's dangerous. What do you call them? I guess collector. So anytime I get my hands on anything, I can collect. That's why I have like every D&D module, even though I've only played like a third of them.
That's okay.
So this is not good. You just cost me probably a couple hundred
it's all good.
Thousands of dollars. So thanks.
There. You know what? Hey, you can ease into it. Okay. It's very easy.
I don't do that. Come on. Man.
I mean,
know
like
me better.
This shirt is actually one of the clan's logos. here, that they are the Sea Fox clan. They all have the clans have totems. So there's like Ghost Bear, Jade Falcon, Clan Wolf, Smoke Jaguar.
I totally thought that was a playoff of your logo.
It's not.
It looks like it. That's crazy.
But there's like this big history, right? So this clan, they were the Sea Foxes. And then there was drama with another clan, and then they changed their names to the Diamond Sharks. And then in the lore, at present time, they went back to the Sea Foxes. Okay. And so I was happy because foxes, right?
Yeah. Color scheme is right on.
Color scheme matches too. Yeah, absolutely. I'm painting some mechs in one of their, a very similar color scheme to them. It's kind of a joint faction with some Sea Foxes and one of the other houses.
Sure.
And yeah, we, like I said, we didn't dive a whole lot into the painting of it. But I mean, they have, you know, back in the day, I got them and I got the, you know, the Walmart Apple Barrel paints and painted them horribly. But now there are paints that do half the work for you. And making them table ready is a lot easier to do, and they look fantastic. Yeah. And it's fun. It is a lot of fun. It's soothing, you know, like I'll just like paint and like listen to a podcast, you know, kind of thing. So
very cool.
It's good times. Yeah. It's good times for sure. Well, Solas, thank you for joining me. This has been fantastic. Yeah. Always great to talk BattleTech. With new people. You're not even the first person I've talked to this year about BattleTech. It's funny. I have three coworkers in the last several months that I have convinced to start reading books. One of them has bought some of the menus and stuff. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Need to get you on an affiliate program or something.
I'm not opposed.
Get you partnered up.
It's like I said, it's a lot of fun, and probably. Oh, one thing I will mention too, if you ever read any Star Wars books, some of the Star Wars book authors started in BattleTech.
Oh, interesting.
And one of my favorites, Michael Stackpole, his first published novel was a BattleTech novel. He wrote the X-Wing series of books in Star Wars.
Yeah.
So that's the caliber of fiction that you have to look forward to. Like they are very well, most of them are very well written, and you know, great continuity in the story between them all. So,
got it.
All right. Well, now for the cleanup, right? So if you are just if you've listened to the end, thank you. I appreciate you. You can, like I said, always happy to support your friendly local game store. But if you don't have that, one of the places you can get BattleTech stuff online is our show sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. They are fantastic. There will be a link in the show notes. And it's fortressminiaturesandgames.com. But check them out. They have they always have product coming. They are very fast with shipping, and the owner's super nice guy. So check them out. They're awesome. And be sure to you know, they'll generally have what you need. Real quick shout outs, Solas, where can people find you?
Yeah, so I run a podcast for Star Citizen. We already covered this at Beyond the Verse. You can follow my socials at /BTV_cast. So any socials you can follow along there. But yeah, that's the easiest place to start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great podcast, covers Star Citizen, professional grade quality. And hosting. But yeah, that, and also you can find him and me together on Tuesday nights.
That's right.
We play D&D online on Twitch at twitch.tv/hearthandhammer. It's a lot of fun. I'm the DM. He's one of the players. He's the rogue, the crafty rogue.
How many episodes?
27.
Yeah, 27. I've rolled one D20.
About 2 hours each. I think you rolled more than that. But
it's been bad.
I don't know. That's okay. Really that's bad. Okay. But you had one recently, so that's
yes.
It's a boost. So
the dumbest reason possible.
It's okay. It's okay. yeah, absolutely. You can find him there. You can also definitely check out the show notes for links to the Mercenary Star podcast socials as well. Give us a follow. Please give us a subscribe and like on YouTube. We broke 500 subs and are getting close to our 3,000 hours of viewing time. So yeah, please help us out. Give us a sub, hit the notification bell there. We are also on Instagram and Twitter or X. You can follow us there. And very soon in the month of February, we will be launching a Patreon. So for anyone asking about supporting the show, follow our social so that you know when that goes live. And it's going to go towards some cool stuff to help me produce good content for you fine people. So, you know, also have lots of aspirations for that. So it's going to be fun. But I'm not doing it to support myself. It's really just to support the show. I have a great job and so don't, you know, won't be depending upon it for myself. But Solace, thanks for joining.
You bet.
And for everyone else, thank you for joining as well. Thank you for listening or watching the VOD. You can watch it on YouTube or Spotify, actually. And look forward to seeing you all next time. So good night and God bless.